Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everyone, how you doing? This is Sana Akori, and this is a show that's going to be very, very exciting. And you know why? Because we're going to have a series of interviews coming up. It's going to be called Do Taino People Exist? Existen la gente que se llaman Taino? And this will be part one, and it's going to be in a very exciting show. And check this out. A lot of people have been emailing me at TainoRadio1491@gmail.com saying, yo, what's up with the shows, man? We haven't heard anything for a while. Well, let me just tell you right now, we've been working on some new shows, some new exciting shows, and it's going to be very exciting. So today is going to be an awesome, awesome show. So I just promised that, you know, these shows coming up is going to be related to Taino identity and so on. So let me play a cool song that I haven't played in a while. And this song is, I'm going to take it way back. And here we go. That's right. Much blessings upon us and all Taino people out there. This is Taino Radio. Since I've been in the movement maybe 30 years ago, that the Taino do not exist. It's an extinct culture that died out maybe 10 years. Sometimes people get a little liberal and say 20 years after the invasion of the Caribbean in 1492 by the Goon Squad led by Christopher Columbus. But there are folks right now in the world that say they're Taino, and often we're looked at as ghosts. Like, how can this be? Or maybe we're a little psychotic, delusional, schizophrenic, whatever you want to say. And a lot of people do believe that. Sadly, many family members look at us as you know, in a weird, weird way, like that we lose it. Have we smoking too much weed or some other stuff? So I don't know. What do you all think? Well, I got a guess. My first guess. She hails from the great state of Florida, which is one of the homelands of the Taino, being Bimini. And her name is El Maldonado. Are you there?
Yes, I am. Hi, how are you?
Oh, that's great, man. Well, listen, you know, it's been a while since Taino Radio's been around, but let's check this out. We're going to tackle this question, do Taino people exist? And this is part one, and you're going to lead this off, L, okay? Because we got to end this argument, right? What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's really just a matter of paperwork that has erased Taino people out of the narrative. And we'll get into that a little bit more later, but it wasn't even right into colonization that we were considered extinct. It wasn't until we started doing the census and they took off the option of putting Indian or Indio, right, in Spanish,
right,
that we were considered extinct. And so we can get into that a little later, but
exactly. You know, the other day, you know, I was trying to play a devil advocate. I try to walk the shoes of a person that says we're extinct, you know, as Taino. You know, I try to walk in their shoes, you know, preparing for this show and this series. And I kept saying to myself, you know what? All right, let's look at their reality, how they see it. And then I got in that shoe, and the shoes were really tight, and I hated it, but I try to walk. Like the Cherokee said, you can't judge until you walk in someone's shoes for a mile. Well, I barely made it. but these are the questions that came. These are the questions that came to me. You know, just like Yaya El, I couldn't do the mile. I couldn't do the 4 months. So, but check this out. What the questions that came to mind was, all right, I'm looking at the major religions in the Caribbean, right? And then I'm looking at the Christian faith. I'm looking at Santeria, I'm looking at the Voodoo, looking at Piritismo or spiritualism, you know. I'm looking at all these popular religions, right, that are practiced by millions of people in the Caribbean, right?
Yeah.
And I'm saying to myself, where's the Taino? Where's the Taino? You know? So then I say, okay. You know, I'll give you that. You know, we don't have a church. We don't have these major communities that, you know, like the Santeria or like the Roman Church, you know. Okay, cool. We don't have all these followers, right? All right, I'll give you that, you know. And then I just started thinking about, you know, I got into the dieting, right? I got into the dieting, the foods, and I'm saying, okay, well, you know, we still eat yuca, we still eat patata, we still eat all these Taino foods that have been around for thousands of years, right? Especially the aguacate, right? So I'm saying, all right.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So then, you know, then I say to myself, well, maybe I'm being too critical. Maybe I'm being too out of control. You know what I mean? And then, you know, maybe I'm being too mean, you know? So then I go into the political arena. I say, okay, we got democracy, right, in Puerto Rico, U.S. government, but that's a whole different thing, you know. We'll get into that. But
oh, absolutely.
But then I go to the Dominican Republic, I go to Haiti. You know, Haiti's under a lot of turmoil right now. But, you know, they're a self-sovereign nation. You know, they're trying to figure it out. In the Dominican Republic, they have their own government. They got, you know, I go to Jamaica. And I said, well, where's the Taino flag? Where's Taino Nation? What's going on? You know, where's their seat at the UN? And then I get really critical, and I say, well, there is no government. There is no chief, per se, that lasted from the invasion. And then I get really critical. I say, well, okay. All right. Then I guess the Taino are extinct because they don't have a flag. They don't have a government. They don't have a currency. Where are they? You know? So I get really critical in those shoes, you know, especially when they're tight and they hurt. So then I realized something. I says, you know, well, why am I being so mean? Why am I trying to destroy a culture a lot of people identify with, you know? And then that's when I take the shoes off. I say, you know, I can't take this anymore. So in this first interview, as Taino, because we claim Taino identity. Let's put the brakes on it. Do you identify as a Taino indigenous person? Let's start there.
Yes, I definitely do. I think it's been a journey to get to that point, though. And I think a lot of people kind of feel that way in our generation as Caribbean people. Because our history about our Taino ancestors is kind of spoken of as like a fairy tale. Oh, that was our ancestors long ago. That's how they used to do it, but that has no bearing on our life in the modern day.
Right.
And it's been working to change that narrative in myself and people around me, and I'll speak on some ways how we've been able to do that this year, especially, and moving forward. But I think that work has helped me, like, no, I am an indigenous person. This is my culture, and if I don't pick it up and I don't learn it and I don't teach it to my future children, then it really will become extinct.
Okay. Well, let me ask you a question. Do you belong to a tribe? Do you belong to a community?
I do. I belong to Arayake. I belong to Arayake Yukayek, and I'm a very proud member to be part of our particular tribe and with our cacique, Inaruboria, and obviously you as our Behike.
Wait a minute. Hold on a second. Hold the press. So, thank you. But there you go. You are a member of a real, living, existing Taino community.
Yes.
And so just so our viewers listen or can hear, listener, is this like a club? Is it a nonprofit? Is it an after-school program? What is Arayake Yukayek?
No. Yes. So Arayake Yukayek is an indigenous sovereign nation of the Caribbean. So in the same way that Navajo Nation and all of the nations here in Turtle Island here in North America have sovereignty, that is what Arayake Yukayek is.
Nice. Okay. All right. That's very good the way you explain that. What has been your role in this community, Arayake Yukayek, Sovereign Nation, Taino Nation? What has been your role in trying to make this dream possible every day?
Yeah, I am a big believer. Well, first off, I should tell our listeners what I do for a living. I am an elementary school teacher, so education is very important to me. And my mother actually is an educator as well. I come from a long line of educators. And part of what I was seeing was kind of missing, not necessarily just in Arayake, but just in general for the Taino community, was really a focus on teaching our children the language. And so I love to draw. I'm an educator, so I have been focusing really on doing a lot of language content for children in the form of books. I've got, I just did my fourth one. My fourth? Yes. I just published my fourth one, actually. And so, you know, and I will continue to do that because it's something I am very passionate about. And not only that, as I am making this content for the kids and really for their parents too, because let's face it, no one is fluent in this language because we didn't grow up with it. We're all learning together. I'm learning, and it's strengthening my language skills as well. So not only am I helping families with their own children or themselves, I'm helping myself as well.
Wow, that's amazing. And that's very important because, you know, when you look at any indigenous nation in the world, right, especially here in the United States of America, over 538 sovereign nations, you know, the language has been an issue recently. A lot of the tribes have been losing the language, right? And I believe recently I read that you were part of some kind of program or some kind of initiative of indigenous languages? Did that pass already? I think I missed the event.
Yes, so it was the Endangered Language Project, and most of the languages that were featured there were from indigenous communities. And what was really interesting was they weren't just indigenous communities of the Americas. I mean, there were indigenous communities of the African continent and Asia and, you know, all of these communities who are definitely in the ethnic minority of where they live, and they're indigenous, right? And so they have to work that much harder to hold on to their language and culture, because it strays from, like, wherever the main or whatever the mainstream culture of their community is.
Okay. Well, so what did you get out of that? Did it inspire you? Did it motivate you more, or were you frustrated?
It definitely a little bit of all of that. I think it can feel frustrating when you are trying to get people to understand why it's important to keep our language alive, because there's a lot of people. Even in my mom is super down with the Taino books that I'm creating, and my dad too. They're very proud, and there's a lot of people who are very proud in my life for what I'm doing, but there are a lot of people in my family who they feel like they're too old to learn a language, or they have no use for the language, because they're like, I already speak English and Spanish. Why am I going to learn this? Because I can't have a conversation with somebody in the grocery store with this language. It's like, yeah, not
right.
yet, but that's what we're working towards.
That's right. That's right, not yet. It's very important, not yet. And I know a lot of people have been frustrated because they're so used to, you know, the English or the Spanish, and they're learning a new language. But it's not really spoken much. It's frustrating. Did you encounter that when you first started learning, the frustration?
You know, I did a little bit, but I have to say, for me, it's very interesting, because I really do feel like the ancestors have, like, brought me through a journey to here, because I have, like, picked up and dropped learning a few languages. But, like, I started learning, like, Brazilian Portuguese, and I started learning Swahili, but nothing really, like, inspired me as much as now learning our Taino dialect, because that feels like home, and that feels very super important to me. But in learning bits and pieces of the other languages, and obviously in Spanish and English as well, it has kind of helped me take out the mindset of, like, only approaching it from being able to speak Spanish, or only approaching it from an English speaking standpoint. So I'm like, oh, like, for example, the X in Borikeneiki is a ch sound, like chocolate, if it's in the middle or the beginning of the word, which is very similar to Brazilian Portuguese. The word that comes to mind is the word for pineapple, actually. And that's abacaxi. And so that she sound has the X. So in learning bits and pieces of those other languages, it's kind of helped me really dive very deeply, as much as I have, actually, into Borikeneiki.
And what is Borikeneiki? Can you share with the audience that the dialect that you've been learning and speaking?
Yeah. So Borikeneiki is a reconstruction of classical Taino, because, unfortunately, we all know colonization happened, and we were the unfortunate side effect of that was that we lost our language, not entirely, but as a spoken, complete language. So
right.
What linguists have had to do is take the pieces that have survived colonization, because there was about 500 or so words that survived, and a lot of them survived just in our spoken Caribbean Spanish, which is why if you ask somebody from Spain, if somebody from Puerto Rico speaks correctly, they're going to tell you no. It's like, yeah, because we have Taino and African influence in our Spanish. So taking the words that survived and then using other tribal languages, Arawak languages, which is the same language family that Taino belonged to, classical Taino.
Right.
Using the languages that are still around today, for example, Garifuna, Lokono, Wayuu, all from, you know, other places in the Caribbean and South America. Javier Hernandez is the one who was the linguist who recreated this dialect for us. And without his work, I wouldn't be able to do what I'm doing. And I'm very thankful for Javier, for sure, because... like I said, he's the one who did the work to really put the language together, and then we are able to take that as a stepping stone to take it to the next level.
Nice. And he's been on the show in the past talking about his work, you know, how frustrating it was for him in the beginning. And one of the, you know, a lot of people were sharing their projects, and then he created his own, which was amazing. And I hear he's coming out with a second book, right? It's coming out soon.
He is, and I'm so excited.
Yeah, and I think he changed it now, too. It's, like, it's not Borinqueniki, but Taino Aiki, something like that, you were saying.
Yes.
And, you know, to make it more universal, right? Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of people out there with different dialects, like Neri. I know Higuayagua also came out with their work. And very exciting time, right? With all these dialects coming out and all these interpretations, all rooted, right? In the ancient,
yes,
these ancient Taino words, phrases,
absolutely.
Wow.
I am so happy to see all of the different reconstructions that are happening, and I do want to remind people, you know, it's okay that there are different reconstructions. There's not a goal to, you know, recreate. I mean, our goal at least was never to like recreate exactly how our ancestors spoke, because even in English and Spanish, if we see how people spoke in 1492, well, we don't speak that same way today. So we have to adapt our language to modern day times, because if we are just looking at how they spoke back in 1492, we're going to be missing words like airplane and car and, you know, things like that. And I was talking to somebody actually on Taino Corner about this, that it's like how the Roman language, Latin, right, over time became many other different languages. So we're taking classical Taino, and that is becoming these different versions of the Taino dialects that are being emerged. And none of them are wrong. They're just different.
That's right. It's different. It's different. That's so important. And, you know, it's always, you know, sometimes it gets very competitive, too. I've noticed that through the years. And you know what? I guess it's human nature. We are a competitive people. You know, that whole sense of, I think that survival mode kicks in sometimes. But it's important that we as Taino people all throughout the diaspora, the Caribbean, that we hang in there, right? We hang in there somehow. And we have to respect the sovereignty of each Yukayeke, right? That's the thing. So.
Oh, absolutely.
And, you know, it happened back in the day. You know, there was different dialects. There was one common language I've read, you know, about that. That even Jaramon Pané didn't know that one. He needed a translator, Juan Mateo. So here's the thing.
Yeah,
you know,
we just spoke about that the other day.
Yeah, that's right. So it would be cool to have one, but you know, we're not there yet. We're still trying to, you know, do our thing in our communities, which is cool. It's all right, you know. I think it's important, like you said, you know, to respect that, right? You know, you just reminded me. I'm looking at Borinqueniki right in front of me. And how he merges the different, the modern and the ancient. Like looking at election, election, ani cacique. I like that.
Yeah.
Or let me see, what's another word? Democracy. Democracia.
Yeah.
Democracia. In Bonekiniki. So, you know, you got to adapt, right?
Yeah.
Looking at some other words.
And it's funny. Just fun fact, one of my favorite words in this dialect is the word for mass. That's really funny. But if you translate it, like, word for word, what it is written as in Borikenaiki to English, it literally means, like, number science. And I love that so much.
Wow. Well, you know, that's awesome. You know, in Taino, we didn't have rice. Arroz.
Yeah.
But in Borikenaiki,
exactly.
It's arroz. I like that.
Well, and even the Navajo Nation, actually, the Diné, which is what they call themselves, they didn't have rice either. So their word in their language is arroz, because it was something that was brought to them by the Spanish.
Go. Wow. See, so you gotta do these things. You know, it's funny when sometimes I hear these videos on YouTube of these elders talking. You know, it's very intriguing languages, you know, they speak in their own, and then all of a sudden you hear like an English word in the middle of nowhere. It's like, there you go. I understood that word. So, right? So it's cool. Now, let me just, let me huddle back what you said about your passion for art, for drawing, and also books. That I believe, let's talk a little bit about that. What have you been writing, and who you've been collaborating with in these projects? You say you have 4 books you published?
Yes. So I have written 3, especially with the mind of, again, they're just very basic. Think like kindergarten, first grade level reading, because we all are starting from the basic building blocks of this language together. And so, you know, eventually we'll be able to get to more like chapter books and everything, but nobody is at that level of reading yet without having like the dictionary and having to look up every other word. So it wouldn't make sense to write that complex of writing yet. But so I have 3. I have those first 3. I have one that's called Taigwe, Takahi, and Taikareya. That one means good morning, good afternoon, good night, and it's just going through with a little cookie frog named Zemi, and Zemi's going through his day, and you're learning the language with him. And all of the books that I have done are bilingual, so they have the Borikenaiki in them as well as the English, and I have one of those books in Spanish and Borikenaiki as well. I'm working on translating the other 2. But the most recent book that just came out actually this week, and I'm just so excited about, is a workbook. And I worked really closely with other members of Arayaki Yukayek to get this out to people. And it's got word searches and coloring pages and multiple choice and charts of how to pronounce things and lots of other, you know, it's about 80 pages of content in there. And it's so, I've been seeing, people have been sending me videos of them using the books with their kids, and it just fills my heart. That's exactly what I want people to be able to do.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah, this springtime, I'm going to bring out the Indigenous Mobile Library. I have to get some copies once I hit the streets, you know, and
mainly
Taino neighborhoods here in Harlem, in the Bronx. We got to get that going, you know. So that's wonderful. Wow, man. Yeah, I think our Yukayeke leads the nations in book writing, right? I noticed that. You noticed that? We publish different
works.
Well,
and I think what it is more than anything is you have to have the people who are passionate about education, because there can be some people who are very passionate about education, but not so much in writing it down for people necessarily. It's more like that oral tradition, which is fine, but it's not necessarily accessible when you are working with a community as spread out as ours.
Yeah.
Or, you know, with, and I don't want this knowledge to just stay within our Yukayek either. I want it to be for other people who don't maybe even realize that, hey, there are people who identify as Taino in, like, the 21st century. It's not just 1492 and then they were wiped out.
Right, exactly.
And they might not know that unless they come across a book like the ones we've been creating.
No, the written word is very powerful. Like I said earlier, there was Ramon Panay, who was commissioned by Columbus to write about the Taino religion or spirituality so they can better control the people. You know, Ramon Panay only knew one dialect. He had to write this report. So he couldn't really communicate with any of the chiefs because he only knew a local dialect, Makorish. So Guatibanacu, known as Juan Mateo, was his translator. So Ramon Panay takes the credit, right? So
yeah.
I believe the memory of Guatibanacu is so important because he was the first one to write a major work that was recognized by Europeans, in a literary work, right? First anthropologist.
Yeah.
I think that's so crucial. Linguists as well, who learned Spanish, this foreign language, right? But actually history does talk about him. When Pope John Paul II came to the Dominican Republic in 92, they were celebrating the evangelization of the Americas, and they mentioned Guatibanacu, but they mentioned him not that he was the first to learn Spanish or that he wrote this work, but that he was the first martyr. Because he was he was a Christian. He became one of the first Christians in his community. So they focused on that. But that was a good thing. You know why? Because people would say, who? Juan Mateo, who was that? Guatibanacu? So a lot of scholars started researching that. Like, wait, hold on. What did he do? And there you go. That's when they started realizing, putting two and two together, right? Like, wait a minute, this Ramon Panay is taking credit for something he didn't do. So, you know what I mean? So, but we need to know this. And in his memory, we need to continue this, right? In his memory. I'm hearing some static on my line. You know, we're here in the Northeast. We have a major snowstorm.
Oh, goodness.
So, yeah, it's been an issue with that. But listen, I just want to give you the encouragement to continue writing, continue your art, because it's the only way, one of the only ways, there's many ways, that people can understand that we still exist, right? That we're still here.
Absolutely.
No matter what. So, man, I really enjoy speaking with you. We got to get you back. There's a show that I'm working on that I'd like to invite you to come on. In the sense of teaching the language and actually talking the language on the show. And I think that's cool, right?
Yes,
and
I would be so down.
So I want all the viewers out there, all the listeners to check into that. And, it's going to be fun. Maybe we get some speakers of the language on the show.
Yes,
so,
absolutely.
So listen, I'm going to end the show. It's been a thrill. I love what you shared, and thank you so much. This is part one. We're going to get other people.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you. And you convinced me definitely that Taino exists.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, and also before I hang up, I'm going to make it an effort. Wait, hold on a second. Can you hear the static? It's kind of crazy up here.
It was for a little bit, but now it's a lot better on my end, at least.
Oh, my. Yeah, it's this big snowstorm. I think they were expecting 32 inches in Long Island, where our cacique is.
Goodness.
I guess it's good for the kids, bad for the drivers, right?
Yeah.
Let me see here. I'm hoping to get out there tomorrow, go sledding, right? And sledding in the mountains there. Okay, hold on.
Well, send some down to
nice
Florida
mountain
for me.
Oh, I know, right? Yeah, you guys don't get snow at all, right? You guys don't get any.
No,
snow,
we
right?
Just get cold. It's supposed to get into like 20s tomorrow. We don't even get the fun of like playing in the snow. We're just cold and wet.
Oh, word? Damn.
Yeah.
I never been in Florida, but here it's very, what's that word? It's very humid. Is that correct?
Yeah. You know, funny enough, I've seen snow a couple times, but I was born and raised in Florida, so it's not like I ever grew up in it. And when I went to Kentucky one winter, and I was able to have my coat open. It was snowing, and I was so baffled that it was just the cold down here because of the humidity. Whenever it does get that cold, it's like gets into your bones, even though you have a lot of layers on, just because it just it's nuts.
Wow, that's so interesting. Well, you know, I got some good news. Before I got some breaking news. Hold on a second. Let me just verify this. Just came up in my. On my feed here. Let me see. Hold on a second. It just came up. Hold on. Okay. Wow. Okay. Selena, who's also one of the hostess in one of the shows, the activism show, who actually worked with you, right, on the book, Anani and the Cave of the Casibahagua.
Yes, so I didn't write that book. I illustrated that book for her, though, and I helped her format it. So I love that book, too. She did such an amazing job.
Well, that was a wonderful piece. But guess what? With your efforts and Selena's effort, everybody's efforts there that pushed the book, she just got the royalties back, and she just donated the royalties to the GoFundMe account. Wow. So... there's a GoFundMe GoFundMe under Anayeke Yukayek. It's called Taino Indigenous Cultural Center and Artifacts. You can find that at GoFundMe. It was started by Stephanie Sherman, one of our warriors in Anayeke, and tribal leadership. Taino Indigenous Cultural Center and Artifacts. Basically, we want to build a cultural center and folks who want to live on the land, you know, just a sovereign nation, to actually, you know, safely hold those sacred objects, you know, our sacred beings in those in a cultural center, you know, creating jobs as well, educational programs, and community. So that money
Thank
just
you for
went
reminding
in today.
Me. Thank you for reminding me, because that the last book that I worked on, the workbook, all of the profits of that are also going to be donated to that GoFundMe cause. So I forgot to mention that.
This is perfect. See, and our goals as Anayeke for this GoFundMe is to create a cultural center to house, you know, our sacred objects. As many people call artifacts, to provide cultural lessons, create employment opportunities, to provide food through agriculture, and to teach what our ancestors left for us. So this is our way of trying to continue to destroy the myth that we don't exist. So, so Elle and people like Selena and everyone in Arayeke, Yukayek, we are trying to raise this funding, you know, trying to raise this beautiful funding so we can get some land. So this is it. This is it. We're going to continue on. So, Elle, I'm definitely going to recruit you for a show. We're going to speak the language.
Absolutely.
We're going to talk about it. We're going to help others, right? And we'll do it to audio. We'll do it to this podcast. So, man, I can't believe it. This is going to be exciting. What do you think about that?
Oh, I'm so pumped. I'm so excited. And it gives me someone to practice with besides just like my phone. I try with my husband and he just looks at me like, okay.
Now there's a guy I found him on Amazon. I'm trying to get him on the show. His name is Angel Rosado. He did an album. he did a like a reggaeton kind of thing on using the Boricua language, you know.
Oh, that's awesome.
So I'm gonna, and he sings it. He sings the songs, the words. So I'm gonna end the show with a little 5-minute piece that he created. It's called Isla Boricua, you know, the island of Boricua. So, and it's in the Boricua language dialect. Can you believe it? So
I'm so excited to hear it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, we got to get him on the show. Maybe that could be our guest in our next show where we're going to, you know, about the language, okay? So El, man, we'll be in touch. Thank you so much for sharing your time with us. And let's go for it. So this is Isla Boricua. Bokwatukan to you, El. Many blessings to your family, okay? Thank you.
Thank you. You too.
Agua yao, tai güey. Anacaona, Taino T. Boriken.